Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of your favorite nonsensical podcast, the PVD Cast. I'm your host, John Orlando, and I hope that you are doing incredibly well out there, listeners. Thank you for tuning in to episode 81, and I'm going to talk a little bit about my guest, but I want to just say thanks again for many, many great emails and tweets about the last couple of episodes. I'm glad so many people are liking them. It really does make me feel good. It keeps me motivated to crank out these episodes. And with that being said, this guest that you're going to hear about in a few moments is a very enthusiastic individual. His name is Joel Kramer. He's an independent comic book creator here in Columbus, Ohio. He has created a book called The Adventures of Hanzi and Joel. His book is quite unique. It's a little bit different. I will say that the artwork is quite unusual. It's very colorful. It's very unique in the way in which it's drawn. But I think that makes it special. And also the fact that it tends to be a little more family-friendly in its content, I think is another thing that makes this book special. I mean, I've had lots of individuals come on here to talk about their independent comic book projects, and most of them tend to be more adult-oriented, if you will. And so when I met Joel a couple months ago, down at Independence Day. First of all, he's very enthusiastic about coming on this podcast. And, you know, I just talked to him about this idea of having something that your kids could read. And, you know, ultimately, I think whenever you look at comic book fans, we all started off as little kids reading comic books. And so I think this is going to be a very interesting podcast for many people that like to hear about the creative side of comic books. So Joel's going to be on here in just a few moments, but before I get into that, I wanted to wrap up with a couple of other things, a couple of tidbits in the world of professional wrestling, and one thing I didn't talk about on my last short or curtate episode of the PVD Cast was the future of The Undertaker. If you haven't listened to curtate, please go back. It's 17 minutes. You can do that while you're on the treadmill, maybe while you're on lunch at work or whatever. It's 17 short minutes. I'm just going to cover in that curtate episode the WWE pay-per-view that just happened a week or so ago, Hell in a Cell, and also my thoughts on the very young NHL season. But one of the things I failed to mention, I kind of forgot about it to be honest with you, was the end of Hell in a Cell, where we saw the Wyatt family come down and attack The Undertaker. The following night on Raw, from what I understand and from what I've been told, is I did not watch Raw last Monday, I will not lie, the Wyatts came out and attacked Kane and carried him off, much like they did to The Undertaker at the end of the pay-per-view. I must confess, I'm a little bit confused where this is going. It seems as if, with The Undertaker, they're just rehashing opponents. Bray Wyatt took on The Undertaker this past year at WrestleMania, and then we had to jump back into the Brock Lesnar feud, so we're jumping back into another past feud? I mean, this doesn't make any sense whatsoever in terms of a booking standpoint. The only thing I can think of is that they're going to do some type of tag team run with Kane and The Undertaker against the Wyatts. That's the only thing that would make sense. But I'm really baffled by this, and I don't understand it. And furthermore, I just keep guessing and keep wondering, when is The Undertaker going to call it quits? I mean, the guy's been doing it a long time. He's been, 25 years we're going to celebrate this month of November. We're going to celebrate 25 years of him showing up in the WWE at Survivor Series. Just how much longer is he going to do this? I mean, I think it would be very, very fitting for him to retire, especially with WrestleMania coming up in Dallas, Texas, where he started. I don't know. I've got to be honest with you. I'm very confused about what they're doing with the Taker. I don't know. Hopefully time will tell and we'll see just what the heck's going on. But I got a couple other little bits of wrestling news I wanted to touch on. One of the other things, the big surprise that came out of Hell in a Cell a week or so ago was the return of Alberto Del Rio. Now, apparently Del Rio's return to the WWE impacts AAA, as they have a show slated for today, which I am recording this on Sunday. So they have a show on Sunday. And they haven't rewrote the show yet because they really, really wanted Del Rio to be on this show. And apparently, that was one of the, I guess you could say, clauses or one of the specifications to Alberto Del Rio returning to the WWE. He requested that he would be able to go back and finish up his AAA dates. Unfortunately, the WWE has him booked on Raw house shows and SmackDown house shows throughout the weekend, so he's not going to be able to get there. Which, I don't know, you would think that that wouldn't be an unreasonable request. Is AAA really a threat to the WWE in terms of its ratings and popularity? I don't know. I think that's kind of a weird situation, and it's kind of crappy for the WWE to do. I mean, I'm assuming that they probably said yes and then changed their mind and booked to Del Rio. I don't know, but should be interesting to see how AAA handles it. I would think that they would have already rewritten the show. I mean, I would think that they would do that, but I don't know. Moving on, Saturday night, just last night, as I said, I'm recording this on Sunday, Jerry the King Lawler was involved in a head-on car wreck. He is okay. Unfortunately, his girlfriend had to go to the hospital to be looked at. She was released, and she's doing fine. And it's out on Twitter, some of the pictures of the head-on collision. The car looks really jacked up. So I think the King and his girlfriend were very lucky to survive that. But as a weird side note, the person to initially break the story was none other than Jamie Dundee. Yeah, that's right. JC Ice of PG-13. I don't know why he is the one to break the news about Jerry the King Lawler. I don't know. It's really odd. There's one person I wouldn't have thought that would have broke that story, and he would be one of them. Anyways, that was weird. And the thing I'm fired up about, and it's not going to be an Orlando fave for this episode, but one thing I'm excited for is news came out that ESPN is going to do a 30 for 30 on Ric Flair. Now, if you remember last year, 30 for 30 did a short on the Von Erich family, and, you know, 30 for 30 documentaries, I don't care, they're interesting, man. The one on the USFL was gripping. The one on, SMU and the death penalty was really well done. I mean, all of them have been really, really fascinating documentaries, and I look forward to seeing one on Ric Flair. I'm sure it'll be well done, it'll be very interesting, and I can't wait for it to come out, so. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to throw out those few little tidbits about the world of professional wrestling. And with that, I want to tell you about one other thing before we get to my conversation with Mr. Joel Kramer. And what that is I want to tell you about is my service that I use to host PVDcast.com. That company is called, of course, Bluehost.com. And you've heard me talk about their great customer service and their competitive pricing. But if you haven't checked them out, please do. Maybe you need a website for your own personal whatever. Maybe you need it for school. Maybe you need it for your business. It doesn't matter what the reason is. Bluehost.com can host your site. All you have to do is just head on over to Bluehost.com to get all the details on their pricing, on their customer service, as the products that they will offer you as well. And trust me, you can't go wrong with Bluehost.com. So simply, once again, head over to Bluehost.com and check out all the information over there. With that, ladies and gents, let us get to a very quick musical interlude. And on the other side of that, you're going to hear my conversation with Mr. Joel Kramer. All right, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. John Orlando here sitting down with Joel Kramer. Joel, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How about yourself?
Not too bad. Not too bad on this Saturday afternoon. We're sitting down here. We're going to talk a little bit about your project, The Adventures of Hanzi and Joel.
Yes.
As you're sporting the shirt.
Yeah.
Like it. You know, there's nothing wrong with self-promotion. There's nothing wrong at all with that.
Yeah, I try to wear these at the conventions as well, but yeah.
Hey, you know, you got to do whatever you got to do. Has anybody ever stopped you on the street and go, "What the heck is that?" Has that ever happened or no?
Not yet, but you've had it happen at work. My wife is here in the studio. So, There was a time, I got to tell you, at Little Caesars.
Okay.
I had just come back from a show and I was wearing this, and the girl just kind of looked at me funny and she's like, "Are you a furry fan?" And I'm like, depends on what degree we're talking here, you know? And she's like, "Well, yeah, you talking animals." And I'm like, "The talking animal part, yeah, but
not the weird sex thing." Yeah, okay, all right.
So that's probably the strangest thing I've gotten so far. But
all right, well, hey, you know, but, at least they noticed. Yeah, all right, yeah. So did you sell her a book since you were there?
I should have tried. Well, he's giving her a card or something. But
anyways, all right, well, let's talk a little bit about this this project of yours, Hanzi and Joel.
Okay.
is kind of like an alternate universe.
Yes.
So
yes.
You want to explain a little bit the okay. synopsis of the main idea?
Yeah. Basically, what we have here is a alternate universe, as you say, where you have humans and animal people that live together.
Okay.
And well, what happened was there was a war a couple thousand years ago where two alien races were fighting in the solar system, and their battle came to Earth, and well, they were going to try to recruit the inhabitant humans that were there to help fight, but there just weren't enough of them to help, you know. So what they did is they had these machines that transformed the animals into animal people, you know,
okay.
giving the
right.
ability to talk, think like people, that kind of thing. And so therefore, they had much more of an army to work with. And well, the one side that was basically fighting for good, liberty, that kind of thing, they defeated the bad guys, and then for reasons I haven't revealed yet. they left the planet and left the animal people and the humans behind.
Okay, so now, this is an ongoing serial. We
yeah,
should mention
yeah.
that. Okay.
Okay.
So don't
yeah.
want to reveal too much.
Right. So we skip ahead now to nowadays, where you know the generations have passed, and now because there's been animal people and humans together for so long, it's kind of, did that ever really happen? Was that just a myth? You know, the whole alien war thing. And
okay.
So, but. As you'll see, and as the series goes on, it really did happen, and things are going to start coming up again, like ancient weapons and artifacts are going to start being revealed and things like that.
So what was the the inspiration for this tale?
Basically, it's based on a kind of a childhood game my brother and a friend of mine, we played
okay.
when we were little.
Okay.
Kind of some make-believe cops
yeah,
and robbers
okay.
fantasy stuff.
Okay.
And at the time, I'd kind of write stories about it and everything. And over time, I just turned it into comic books because, actually, believe it or not, it was like Peanuts and Garfield that got me started on comics.
Really?
Yeah, because I like,
really?
I just liked that
you
style
know
of telling.
I mean, I understand that, but I think you're the first to mention that because I think every other guest, every other comic book creator that has appeared on this podcast has talked a little more about being, you know, going to that particular spinner rack and getting Spider-Man, getting Superman, and that. So, what was it about Garfield and Peanuts that got you interested? What hooked you?
I'm not sure what it was. I think it was, I'd always wanted to be a writer.
Okay.
And I don't know, it just seemed like maybe it was it was easier to
okay.
do instead of just having to describe what was happening. I could just draw it and show it, you know,
okay.
kind of thing. Yeah, I think it was just, I don't know. I just like the way it was. You could tell a story with it.
Okay. When did you decide you wanted to be a writer? Was it early on? Like
yeah.
when you was a little kid?
5, 6 years old.
Really?
Yeah.
That early?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was actually writing Hanzi at the time.
Okay. Which
yes.
I have a question about Hanzi
oh,
in a minute,
okay.
but
yeah.
we'll get to that. So
okay.
did you, like, were your parents avid writers? Were they creative types? What spurred you on to that?
I think they're both.
Was there a teacher, maybe? I mean, let's, can you recollect as to what made you think that, yes, I want to be a writer?
I believe there's people on my mom's side that were writers.
Okay.
I don't know. I just always like to read, and I guess
okay.
I guess
right.
I just got to thinking, I'd like to do that, you know,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, why so, not? Create your own tales.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So Peanuts and Garfield, interesting.
Yeah. Now, as far as the superhero aspect, it was Spider-Man that first got me started.
Oh, okay.
As,
all right.
As far as doing maybe the good versus evil kind of thing.
Okay. Gotcha.
So, because I always liked his... you know, no matter what was happening, you know, he could be in the biggest drama and then he'd be making jokes about it.
Sure.
You know, just
yeah.
upsetting the bad guys, making them make mistakes by ticking them off, you know. I just
yeah.
love that kind of
yeah,
that kind of style.
Yeah,
so.
All right. No, so, real quickly, let's talk for a minute because I know from doing some research you mentioned that Hanzi has a very special place for you
mm-hmm.
because it was actually a toy that was given to you from your grandmother. Do you
yes.
want to explain a little bit of that story?
Oh, goodness.
Was it a stuffed animal, or was
no.
an actual, like, hard plastic toy?
He's a hard plastic toy. I think
okay.
he's made by... I looked it up a few years ago. It's like Imperial Toys, I think, was,
okay.
was the name of the... It was a toy dragon that was made. We were at a garage sale, though, and I was 5, 6 years old at the time. And I don't know what it was, but I looked under this table, and there was this dragon just sitting there. And I just... Instantly, I'm like, I love this. I just love how that looks and everything. And my... Grandma bought it for me.
Okay.
And for some reason, got in this back of the station wagon and just looked at him like, you know what? I think his name's going to be Hans. And where the name Hansi came from, I don't know. It just sounded good at the time. I wish I could go back and ask myself. Like, what were you
wish you had an awesome story for it. Like,
yeah, exactly.
It was like the, my great-grandfather
yeah.
was the, king, the heir to the King of England or
yes,
something
yes,
like that.
Yeah. Passed down through the generations, yeah.
But was this the name you came up with?
does the name. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And so then you were quote unquote pals for forever then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you just obviously had to incorporate him into the comic.
Yeah. Yeah.
As well as I got to ask, is Joel yourself in your comic? Because that I would guess those two are your protagonists for this particular tale.
In a lot of ways, he is. Actually, in a lot of ways, everybody in the series has some element of my personality.
Gotcha.
I guess really Joel is the guy I would like to be.
Why is that?
Well, you know, he's heroic. He doesn't back down in the face of danger kind of thing. He's willing to, as you read in the series, he very much puts his life on the line when the cause is right. You know, he is willing to risk himself to... I just don't know. I would like to think I would do that in a situation.
We all are that way. Yes, yeah. We would love to think that if the bad guy mugger was going to get us, we'd do some Jet Li karate kung fu and beat him up. Yeah, yeah. I understand.
But his thing is, and it'll be revealed in the series eventually, but he's pretty much willing to go to whatever lengths it takes to save the day for somebody. You know, he's been known to bend the rules at times. Not break the rules, but like bend them. Which is actually why he's a private detective rather than a police officer.
Right, which I was going to mention. I think we overlooked the fact that Hanzi and Joel run their own detective agency.
Yes.
So I kind of glossed over that.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, they run a detective agency. He used to be a police officer, but so many times, as he says, you know, he would try to do the right thing, but it's like, no, you can't do that because you have to follow this procedure instead. Mm. You should have done this first, and he just couldn't do that anymore, so he went off on his own.
Okay.
And Hanzi is a dragon he found in a junkyard, which that'll be... I know it's weird, but for some reason his egg, when he was born, was left in a junkyard. He was abandoned, and Joel found him as... You know, Joel took him home and raised him as his own. And so basically there... You know, Hanzi grew up, and now he has become a detective like Joel. He's still learning the ropes and everything, and Joel has to teach him every now and then about, okay, now you would want to do this in this situation. And so you have some life lessons that pop up.
So Joel acts as a friend, but also maybe as a father figure at times, too.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It's an interesting relationship because, you know, they're sort of father and son, but they're also best friends, and they're also partners on their... So it's a pretty complicated relationship.
Gotcha.
Got.
Okay. Yeah. Well, a couple of the other characters that I wanted to touch base on. Mm-hmm. The one I think is the most interesting is the Ghost of New Bark City.
Ah, yes.
So is he a little bit of a tip of the hat to Batman? First of all, let's describe who that is. In the book, those that are listening, let's describe who that is.
Okay. Oh my goodness, how do I do this without spoiling? Okay. So basically, they have their city that they live in is called Alien Town, because that's where the central headquarters of the good aliens was in this town. Well, the next city over is a place called New Bark City, which is kind of a play on New York City.
Okay.
And but basically, he is the a vigilante there. Nobody's quite sure his story exactly because there's. As you say, he is kind of a tip toward Batman, where nobody's quite sure. It's like, is he a good? Is he bad? Is he even real? Some people say he's not even real.
And okay. There it's is like a myth of that individual. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. The rumors run from, he's just a vigilante guy to maybe he's a ghost. Maybe he's a vampire. Just a minor spoiler here, but one of the police officers they'll meet later in the series, actually it was around episode 9, he actually claimed that... some bad guy ran into the Ghost of New Bark City, and they found his body drained of blood.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Okay.
And it's just like, did that really happen? Kind of. He's just messing with them at the time, because he doesn't know for himself for sure about this guy. But the Ghost of New Bark City, as I said, is a vigilante. He comes and goes mysteriously. He'll appear and fog will appear, and he'll just appear out of nowhere. Defeat the bad guy, disappear again. It's kind of really hard to...
So he is kind of, though, a little bit of a tip of the hat to those type of comic book characters. I mean, Batman's just one of them. I mean, there's many that we could run through that just show up and they have this mystique about them. Yeah. We could throw Daredevil in there or whatnot. Okay. Yeah. So he is modeled a little bit after those type of characters that you've read as a child or as an adult.
Yeah, I always like the superhero that comes in and saves the day and just quickly leaves. Doesn't stick around for a photo op or anything like that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
because for him, it's, you know, I saved the person and that's it.
Yeah, that's his reward or her reward, if you will. A couple of the other characters, Copper McDog.
Yes. Actually, he is based on a family pet we had.
Oh, really?
Back when we were 7 or 8. His name was Copper. He was a golden retriever. I want to say he was mixed with some other, but golden retriever for sure. But, yeah, he's basically Joel's best friend.
Okay.
Besides Hansi. He and Joel went to college together.
Okay.
Copper became a pilot. He was originally there to be an artist, but it just...
is that a little bit of an autobiographical jab at yourself? Okay.
A little bit, yeah. But he originally went for the art program and then decided about... He liked the aviation program, so he became this pilot. And so he and Joel were in college together. They were roommates initially. And actually, Copper's one of the first people Joel ever saved.
Okay.
In his career, because Joel was early in his, he was at the police academy at the time, you know, taking the law enforcement, and there was an incident where Copper was doing his, pretty much his senior flight for the, you know, where you fly by yourself kind of thing, and there was an emergency in the plane in midair where the landing gear wouldn't open, so Joel found this way to, he basically grabbed onto the bottom of another plane and flew up there, jumped over to Copper's plane, and unhinged the landing gear in mid-flight. Like I said, Joel goes to extremes.
That sounds like some Arnold Schwarzenegger, like True Lies type of stuff. Yeah. I like that. All right.
Yeah. So, but they have since, after graduation, they kind of have a house together now. And when Hansi came along, they became basically his...
Support system.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you also have, is it Kara Raven?
Raven.
Raven.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. She is a detective as well. She's kind of... She's a lot like the female version of Joel.
Okay.
they kind of play off each other in that way. But basically, their story was, back when Joel was a police officer still, he went over to her city, which is Treetorn, I believe is the name I gave it. But they worked together for a while, and they didn't quite get along at first, just because they were always, you know, butting heads and everything, because of their similar style. And on the final night that they were working together, they fought this guy that was basically a supervillain, and Joel ended up saving the day by going to extremes once again. You know, don't want to spoil the story, but basically he ends up saving the city, and the police chief gets upset with him because look at all that destruction you caused though when you were saving the city. But Kara says, "But he did save the city. You know, nobody died." So.
Which is always something that never ever comes up in superhero comics. Just as a side note, I always chuckle about that. That Superman, for an example, in Doomsday destroy half of Metropolis, but that's okay. I mean, he saved the day.
It's all good.
Billions of dollars of damage has occurred, but yeah. All right.
So, but yeah, basically that was, they kind of he ended up leaving because he said, this is exactly why, oh, I'm sorry, I misspoke. He had quit the police force at this time, like just previously to that story. He said, well, I'm going to go off and make my own police for my own agency. If you'd like to join, I would love to have you because we get along so well. And she at the time said, no, because, you know, this is what I want to do. I want to be a police officer, and I always dreamed of this. And so sometime later, right around this time this series truly begins, she ends up coming back and says, okay, I want to give it another try. Are you still okay with that? So now he's kind of, she's basically sort of the ex-girlfriend at the time.
Oh, okay.
They never really like went out.
I was going to say, did they actually have a relationship in an earlier episode?
They were starting to. That's when they kind of separated. But now that they're back together again, their relationship is starting to grow again.
And okay.
They're starting to realize that they do have feelings for each other.
And then the last person that fits into the detective agency, Claw.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Okay. Claw is actually the alien of the story.
Okay.
At least one of them so far. When we meet him in episode 1, he is a warrior from another galaxy.
Okay.
And through a turn of events, he's chasing this space criminal and ends up going through a wormhole after him and ends up in our galaxy.
Okay.
But the wormhole shuts behind him. And so now he's trapped in this galaxy. And thankfully, he lands near where their agency is. And because the alien he was chasing was bringing a super weapon with him. And unfortunately, the ship crashes, with the alien inside, and the alien dies, but this run-of-the-mill criminal finds the alien weapon.
Okay.
And starts using it.
Oh.
And nobody on Earth knows how to deal with this thing because they've never seen it before.
Sure.
But Claw comes along, and he meets up with Hansi and Joel, and with his help they end up...
Okay.
But the problem is, even though it's called Alien Town, they're not sure what they would actually... They're not actually sure what the populace would think about a true alien living among them.
Okay. All
so right. Hansi and Joel are keeping him a secret for now.
Oh. You for know? Fear of some discrimination or whatnot. Yeah. Okay.
Because he's... if you look at his picture alone, he's a pretty big guy.
Sure, yeah. So,
with some superpowers of his own.
Gotcha. So. Which, by the way, if you're interested, you can go to joelkramercomics.com, and that's where you can look at those pictures. So we'll throw that plug in right now.
Thank you.
And then you have a couple of other individuals that are kind of more along the lines of allies within the detective agency. Before we get to talking about a couple of the villains, Georgia Fine and Darian Fletcher.
Yes.
Can you describe their role in this universe?
Yes. Georgia Fine is a detective in New York City as well. So is Damian Fletcher. Damian Fletcher is kind of the... I'd attribute him to maybe similar to like Harvey Bullock.
Okay.
You know, the jerk detective that...
Sure.
He's a good cop, but...
But he's jaded, cynical. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, and he's kind of a, you know, tends to be a jerk around the good guys, and they're just like, shut up, man, you know, kind of thing. But he's a good cop nonetheless. And Georgia Fine is the hard-nosed detective, but she really believes that Hansi and Joel are, you know, doing the right thing and what they do. She's going to... They've only met with her maybe a couple of times so far, but she will become an ally of theirs.
Okay.
Her situation, though, is she thinks of the ghost of New Bark City as a bad guy because of something, a past encounter that she had with him. So they're going to... I'll play on that, you know, more as we go. But you'll see exactly what happened that she feels that way. But, yeah, she's definitely a good cop, and you could definitely trust her, you know, and everything. And as I said, they'll become more allies with her as time goes on.
And some of the villains that these individuals have run across, the boss.
Yes, that's the name I have for him right now.
Okay.
Because I don't want to reveal his true name just yet. Actually, episode 10 ends the, quote, first season of the story.
Which I was going to mention that. I found it very creative that each issue is considered to be an episode. Mm-hmm. And I was going to ask, could an individual just read one issue and still get a story, or is it continuous? Because it is a serial that, man, you really need to get the full breadth of the story. You really need to read episode one through whatever.
You can pretty much pick up anywhere. I would recommend starting from the beginning.
Sure. Well, I mean,
you know,
obviously,
but yeah, because things end, but they kind of carry over at the same time. Yeah.
So on episode 10 ends season one, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there's an overarching story that continues through 1 through 10. I originally planned it that way.
Okay.
And at the end of episode 10, you. I'm trying to think how to word this without spoiling too much. But basically, you'll find out not necessarily his name, but you'll find out more about the identity of who this guy, the boss is.
Okay.
But basically, he's a villain that's been there since episode 3, even before, actually. He was just kind of in the shadows. Like Joel, he's willing to go to whatever lengths it takes to get the job done, only in his case, it's pull off the crime. You know,
I was going to say, it's mayhem.
Yeah, so. Mayhem, absolute mayhem. And, over time, I'll reveal little by little who exactly he truly is, and he you'll see his motivations behind what he does, things like that.
And then, I'll just throw out a couple others.
Sure.
Vandroth and Dr. Skell.
Okay. Dr. Skell is part of the boss's team. He actually has a team of mutant criminals that work together. They hide out on the edge of town because, you know...
Again, that idea of the populace of this particular universe not real fond of mutants or aliens or whatnot.
Yeah. But he's kind of like the... The reason he's called the Doctor is basically he's a mechanical genius.
Okay.
He can hack any system. He can build pretty much anything. You know, because he hacks... in one episode, he hacks a safe, this like high-tech safe, just in a few seconds, just kind of thing.
Okay.
He hacks the security grid on a prison within moments.
Right.
You know,
okay.
Just pulls out his laptop. Oh, yeah, I got this. Click, click, click.
All right.
You know, kind of thing. Also on his team, he has a guy called Triker.
Yep.
He's kind of the majorly the muscle of the team. In one episode, he picks up a truck and throws it through a wall.
Okay.
So you don't want to mess with this guy hand to hand. Also on the team is a man named Froglegs. He's the only guy on the team that is not a mutant. Now, as far as Van Droth goes,
he seemed to be like, if I was to describe them, mm-hmm. like a Dr. Evil or like a Goldfinger-like character. He seems to be the man kind of pulling the strings behind yes. the scenes. Would that be yes. an accurate way to describe him?
Very much so, okay. yes. When we first meet him, he is basically a guy that manufactures prototype weapons, like extremely illegal stuff. Like we're talking electric swords, modified shotguns, all kinds of. And the problem is he doesn't sell it to the good guys. He sells it to the bad. It's like,
course.
Oh yeah, use these weapons because I want you to cause mayhem in this city.
Sure.
Now, why he's doing this, sure. you got to find out over time. But yeah, he's basically the even more behind the scenes than the boss is.
Sure, sure.
So
how long do you plan on having this particular adventure go on? You mentioned that you're up to episode, is it 12 or 13 now?
I am a few pages away from finishing 12.
Finishing 12, okay.
Yeah.
So we're into season 2 then.
Yeah.
So how long do you think, or do you see the adventures of Hansi and Joel going?
Oh, goodness.
Or is it? Did you have an idea and now it's just like kind of running amok, so to speak? Like you're like, I'm going to do X amount of issues or episodes, and now it's like, wait a minute, I can go this way, I can go that way. I can. Did you have a plan originally, and then it's kind of mutated or not?
So far, the only thing I've truly planned is I had season one planned. I had every episode ready to go. I knew exactly what was going to happen in each one. Season two, I know where it's going to go, and I know how it's going to end. It's probably going to be 10 issues long as well. Season 2 will. That's my plan. Now, as far as a definitive ending for the series, I don't really have one.
Is this part of your own creative process, though, just to kind of come up with some ideas and kind of go? You said that you planned out season 1, so for season mm-hmm. 2, did you take a different creative process, I guess is what I'm asking, you know,
yeah.
in terms of mapping yeah. out, just kind of go with what you feel, more so than mapping things out?
At times, yeah.
Okay.
Basically, I try to plan at least a couple episodes ahead.
Sure, yeah.
Just so I know where we're going with this. Because I have a plan right now for where we're going from as far as 12 onward goes.
Okay.
Up till maybe 20. There have been a couple of times where, actually once already, I had episode 12 all planned out. Here's what's going to happen exactly. I went to write the script, and it just wasn't working somehow.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't transitioning well from 11 to 12. So I came up with this idea instead of addressing a question that had happened earlier in the series. And so I'm like, well, we could address that in this particular episode instead. What would happen then? So I did that, and the script came together perfectly for that episode.
Oh, there you go.
So,
okay.
So instead, I'm going to take what was going to be 12, move it later on in the series, maybe just a couple issues down the line.
Okay. You did mention off air that your wife is your editor.
Yes.
And does that cause squabbles at home? Does that?
If
I may be nosy, does that cause arguments and whatnot? No. Okay.
Not particularly. No. No, it's actually wonderful having a live-in editor.
Sure. Without a doubt. I mean, it's very convenient and handy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice because she helps me not only with the script but the coloring as well. I'll say, you know, what do you think about if I'm not sure about a color, you know,
mm-hmm.
how does this sound? Or there was one character in episode 7 that I created, the villain for that story, where I was starting to color this character, and she said, "Why don't you change the character's hair color to this instead? Just see how that looks." I tried it that way, loved it, absolutely loved it. It just turned out beautifully. So. Thank you for that.
Now, one of the things that you mentioned earlier on when we were talking about Copper McDog,
mm-hmm.
You yourself went to art school for a while, correct?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. And so did you decide at that particular time that you wanted to pursue something else, or?
No, I still wanted to do art at the time. I kind of branched out into maybe being a art history, maybe doing, giving tours at museums, that kind of thing. What happened, honestly, was it was money.
No, sure.
I just couldn't afford to keep going.
Yeah, that's always the problem there.
Yeah.
But so you took those tools, what you did learn there, mm-hmm. what your own imagination, and started to create mm-hmm. this particular world of the adventures of Hansi and Joel.
Yeah.
And you also say that you're going to come up with your own web series coming soon, correct?
Yes.
Life with Hansi?
Yes. when you read the series, Joel mentions oftentimes that, wow, when Hanzi was younger, the things he would do, the crazy stuff he would do.
Okay, so it's its own spinoff.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. So what happens in this series is he basically goes back and tells you, here's what went on when he was younger, the kind of weird things he got into, the funny stuff. He's still a crazy character to be, anyway.
Yeah.
actually, I forgot to mention this earlier, but in the mythology, the name Hanzi means crazy dragon.
Oh, okay.
But right. It was a name, one of their ancient languages. It translates basically to crazy dragon, which Hanzi lived up to it perfectly.
Okay.
So, because Joel actually called him that after watching some of the stuff he would do as a child. It's like, yeah. But yeah, life with Hanzi is going to be basically... it's not so much a action comic. It's more like along the lines of Garfield. It'll be just some strips.
Okay. So it'll be a slice of life, kind of, yeah. With him as a protagonist. Yeah.
Just telling a few stories here and there, kind of thing. And it'll kind of jump around probably on his age. And a little something fun, I think, you know. So
how's the feedback been for the book? Because I you know, I first met you down at Independence Day, mm-hmm. a few months ago and whatnot, and I know that you've talked about on your Facebook page and whatnot, going to a couple different cons, mm-hmm. Cincinnati and Piqua coming up and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So how's the reaction been for the book?
It's been pretty good, actually. I actually started doing conventions, was it around this time last year? Mm-hmm. I was at WizardCon.
Okay.
Started really big, you know,
sure.
At first.
Well, you know.
But no, it's gone really well. I get a lot of positive feedback. I have several people that actually follow me around to the shows.
Okay.
And they'll say, well, I've got this book, and I got to get the next one in order. And
really? Well, that's excellent.
Yeah. So at first, I was just selling 1 through 5 at the conventions, but now that they've bought all the first 5, I'm like, okay, I guess I got to start releasing the rest of them at conventions as well.
So what's some of the feedback that they give you? Do they say they enjoy it because it's... It's a colorful and unique book, or mm-hmm. because it seems... I mean, I think it's safe to say it's a little more family-friendly, if yeah. you will, and whatnot. Yeah. So what's some of the feedback that they give you that fans say, hey, this is awesome?
Yeah, one person has told me that he really enjoys the fact that they don't talk like superheroes necessarily. They talk more like regular people would,
okay.
and he kind of likes that. Which, that's what I was aiming for, is I was... Somewhere I read you should... people in real life don't talk with... perfect grammar.
Sure.
You know, they should talk with mistakes, and
right.
if you want to make it a real story, you know, make them talk like where they would live. If they live in Boston, make them talk like they live in Boston.
Sure,
if they
yeah.
live, you know, wherever. So, and these are just, you know, these guys talk like best friends would, because that's what they are. Another thing that I had one guy say, he basically looked at it as it's basically a buddy cop story. You know,
like Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, Lethal Weapon. Yeah. If they went on it
right,
daring
sure.
adventures and.
Right.
More than they already do, but
it didn't cuss and kill people. Anyways,
yeah, you know, if they fought aliens and magical
right.
artifacts and that kind of thing, yeah, yeah. Let's see what else. Yeah, I've heard people say how they really like the original take on, you know, just that kind of story in general. You know, they say it's a lot of fun.
Well, speaking of, since you talked about buddy cop, mm-hmm. buddy cop movies, mm-hmm. is that a little bit of inspiration? Did you know, are you a fan of detective shows or detective stories and that type of cop genre, or
yeah.
is that just
yeah.
okay?
Yeah, I am. I really like it when you know, they work together to save the day, but they also kind of banter with each other at the same time. Yeah, I really like that kind of thing. So that's what I'm trying to come across with here.
Gotcha. Can I put you on the spot and say what's your favorite cop show?
Oh,
cop television show. I did put you on the spot,
yes,
right now. I did. I can see it.
Oh, goodness. I'm not sure if I watch necessarily a straight-up cop show. Like, I watch NCIS, and you know how they banter
sure,
on that.
Sure, yeah, okay. All right, so there's a little influence from there, shall
yeah,
we say.
From
okay.
there. I'm trying to think
right.
of...
How about this? Maybe in comics, who are some of your favorite partnerships?
Okay. Well, I do enjoy, as I was telling you earlier, I do enjoy the... I know he works by himself, but I enjoy Spider-Man's whole teasing the bad guys
sure.
while,
okay.
while he's bad, making them goof up and make mistakes
sure.
because you know, they were so upset of what he was doing. I'm trying to think of a team of offhand.
I will throw out there, because I'm a huge Deadpool fan, but mm-hmm. I enjoyed Deadpool and Weasel when he had his own, like the weapons guy and the banter and Blind Owl as well.
Yeah.
I always dug
yeah.
that, which... I'll throw that one out. That was a favorite of mine.
Yeah. I can't think of anybody at the moment, though.
Okay.
All
right. All right. Well, if we come back to it,
sure,
you just jump in there and let me know. So.
Sure.
What's your favorite episode so far that you've created?
Honestly, I often say this. My favorite one is the one I'm working on right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Episode 12. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I'll say that every book, though. Because you know? What I usually try to do is make the one that I'm working on right now my favorite. You know, make it the best one.
Like that. That's a good philosophy to have. Yeah. Okay.
So usually whichever one is I'm working on is my favorite because it's the newest one. Now, if I had to pick, though, probably either number 8 or number 10.
Could I ask why without revealing too much about those particular books?
Yeah. In number 8 especially, we run the full gamut, I think, of the story. You have some mystery, some intrigue. You have some action sequences. You have gunfights in it. No blood or anything like that, but you do have a scene where there's basically a big brawl going on. And my good guys win the day, not by necessarily overpowering the villains, but by outsmarting them.
Oh, okay. And that was episode 8, you said?
Number 8, yeah. Okay. They often do that in every episode, though. They do win by, you know, karate chops and gunfights and stuff, but they often, more often, win by outsmarting the bad guy. Because, episode 8 has, you know, they have fights against robots, they have fights against... they have a mid-air battle while in an airplane.
Okay.
An airplane that's not armed, by the way. It's just a crop dusting plane.
All right.
I don't want to reveal too much more than that.
Sure.
But it's pretty exciting stuff. And I think the reason I enjoy episode 10 so much is because of the way it wraps up the first season.
All right.
I think I did if I can toot my own horn here, I think I did a great job.
Go right ahead.
I think I did a great job of wrapping it all up. So.
I'm going to go on that similar vein.
Sure.
Favorite character that you've created?
Oh my! there is one, but I can't reveal all about that one yet because she hasn't been introduced.
Okay.
Necessarily, but besides her,
maybe from some of the ones we've talked.
Yeah,
about.
Right. Some of the ones we've talked about. I would definitely say the boss.
Okay.
Just because of his cunning and his pretty much complete disregard for anybody else when it comes
to
just the fact that he could be just so evil. As you'll see in the series, some of the things he pulls against the good guys are just, like, so diabolical kind of thing. And the fact that he seems to enjoy what he's doing, actually. He's not like, oh, I felt bad about, destroying this. It's like, oh, that was great. Did you see how I did that? That was funny. Yeah. As far as the good guys go, I would say probably Hanzi's my favorite, maybe because he's been around the longest.
Sure. you have the most familiarity with him, without a doubt. Sure, yeah.
And, he's comical.
Mm-hmm.
He goofs around a lot. But when it comes down to it, he can take things seriously.
Okay.
He's very short. He's maybe 3 foot tall, if that. But he makes up for it at the same time. He can totally hold his own in a fight. He may have to kick you in the shins first to get you down to his level. But another thing that I didn't mention about him is he has a fire-breathing ability.
Okay.
Yeah, he's basically a little walking flamethrower at times. Mm-hmm. And he's used that in battle. There was an episode where he took on a guy that was wielding a knife, and he just like shot his flame, burned the guy's hand, made him drop the knife, and then he took him down from there. But
clever, nice. All right. So, what do you think ultimately of some of the aspirations you might have for the project?
Well, I am hoping to someday have a couple more spinoffs for the series.
Okay.
There's going to be at least a couple graphic novels that I'm going to... it's going to be a spinoffs of some of the characters that are there. But I have some kind of... a couple of origin stories that are going to... I'm going to need probably a graphic novel to tell. I'm hoping to someday do a prequel for Claw.
Oh, okay.
Because, as I mentioned, he was a warrior before he met them. And I was going to do kind of a... here's how he got started up until... Well, the book would end with him going through that wormhole.
Okay.
And it's kind of like, well, you know the rest of the story from there.
Yeah.
As I said, I'm working on that web series. Right now, I'm just trying to balance the working on the regular book and working on the webcomic.
So that's probably, I was going to say, that's probably a con of being a self-creator, self-publisher, is the time spent between the two projects.
Yeah, it's kind of a... Well, if it doesn't get written, whose fault is that?
Right.
You know, if it doesn't get drawn. It's,
sure. What's another negative, maybe, of being a self-independent creator?
Oh, goodness. The self-promotion.
Yeah?
Yeah. You're the one that has to get out there and promote yourself.
Oh, you're preaching to the choir. But go ahead, carry on. I don't want to get off on a tangent.
You know, I did my first convention last year at WizardCon. And it's kind of unnerving having to tell complete strangers, hey, you should buy my book and here's why. And,
sure,
know, give me a chance. I know you've never heard of me, but, you know. I think I've worked up a pretty good spiel by this point, though, that I can pretty much crank out real fast and say, you know, here's an... It seems to go over well with people.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
I kind of have to walk the balance between trying to work on the not throwing in people's faces too much. That, hey, I'm working on this book. You should check this out.
Yeah.
And just kind
of subtlety. Subtlety,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah,
yeah.
Not being like, you know, I hope you check out this book. Right. Kind of thing. You know. But I think I've done a lot better. I've been more confident about getting myself out there. At each convention, I feel like I'm getting better about just promoting myself.
Sure.
But not overdoing it at the same time.
Right, yeah. So. There is that fine line. You don't want to be an obnoxious guy that people are like, I don't want to talk to this guy. But you need to be assertive as well. I understand where you're coming from.
Because I really do feel that if you give the book a chance, I think you'll really enjoy it.
Okay.
I mean, it's got a little something for everybody. It's got romance in there. It's got mystery in there, action, adventure, aliens, mutants, superheroes.
It's got a little bit of something for everyone.
Yeah, I really enjoy all those things. So I kind of bottom line is what I set out to do is make a book that I would enjoy myself. That if I were not creating it, I'd be like, hey, that sounds really good. I'd like to check that out. That's kind of fun.
You know? Well, let's go real quick. I'd ask you about the negatives of being a self creator. What's some of the positives?
Oh my! One of the positives is there's nearly nobody to say, is it okay if I go this way with this story?
Sure.
You know,
sure.
I don't have a publisher to be like, you know, hey, can I, is it all right if this does this or what a thing? And whereas I can just say, okay, well, where do I want this story to go? Mm-hmm. Which is also a negative because where do I want this story to go?
Yeah, no, right.
As I mentioned earlier.
Right, yeah.
That whole, this story is not working. What do I do here? One of the other positives is there's really no deadline for when I get the book out, which that doesn't mean I'm not going to work on it for a couple months now. Kind of
right. No.
it's kind of nice to not be tied down to the book has to be out right this date. But at the same time, I'm also trying to get the book out as soon as I can because I know people are waiting on it, and I don't want to keep them waiting.
Well, let's talk about something else too, real quick, because I do know that on your website you mentioned that you do have kind of a clothing line, a T-shirt line, if you will.
Yes, that just came out.
Oh, that did? Okay.
Right. It's through Screened.com.
Sure.
I think it's like Screened.com/KramerComics. That's with a C. And I only have a couple of shirts out right now, mm-hmm. but I have the shirt that I'm wearing right now.
Sure, yeah. Which
is available, which you can't
which
see.
Which no one can see, but that's okay.
Just trust me, it's there.
It's there. You can go to the website and see it. There you go. Anyway. Yeah.
But I'm working on that.
It's okay. I'm notorious for air quotes, and I'm like, no one can see them. Why are you doing this? It's a podcast. It's an audio podcast. Yeah. Anyways, but I digress. Anyways.
No problem. So, yeah, I'm going to be releasing more shirts as time goes on.
I would like to ask about one. You have Ohio the Penguin?
Yes.
Where did that come from? Because is that a character from the book itself, or is that just an independent thought of yours?
It's an independent thought. Actually, my mother tells these stories to her grandkids about Ohio the Penguin. She tells them before bedtime.
Oh.
And she asked me to design what Ohio would look like.
Okay.
So I made this picture, and she had the shirts made into shirts for the grandkids so they can wear.
Okay.
And the more I thought about it, I'm like, well, you know, maybe people won't know the story behind the Ohio, but maybe they would just enjoy the character wearing a shirt like that. Because it's a cute picture.
Where did your mother, or you said, your mother, right? Yeah. Where did your mother come up with the story? Like, did she hear from someone else, or did she just one night was like, I'm going to tell you a tale?
I think that's what it was. She was going to tell them just a bedtime story. And they came up with, I think the grandkids came up with the idea of Ohio the Penguin.
Okay.
Just calling him that. They may have a toy penguin that they play with, I believe. Just each night my mom comes up with more. She must be where I get the creative
stories. I was going to say, there you go.
I just thought it was a cute looking design anyway. I thought if anybody else would like it, you know, they can, even if they don't know the story behind it, they might.
It is. I will say that it was the one that caught my eye the most, because I'm like, that's quite a unique design. It is, dare I say, adorable. And I say that because some people will be like, ah, God, I don't. But it is a cute sketch of that and of that character. And so
it was intended to be adorable. So.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I mean, there you have it.
So,
All right, so let's talk a little bit about some of the places you're going to be at, because I know that you mentioned on your website November 14th, right? Out in Piqua, correct?
Piqua, yeah.
Piqua Comic Con?
Yeah. Actually, that's her hometown.
Oh, is it? Okay, it's the wife's hometown. All right.
Yeah.
So then you'll have thousands of people there.
Probably. I would hope.
Well, no, I mean to see you, not anyone else.
Nobody else. Let's be selfish.
It's you, Joel. Anyways.
That's right. No, yeah, I actually was there back in May.
Okay.
Yeah. I know the guy that's running the...
Okay.
His name is Paul Lee, and he's a comic book store owner.
Okay.
Actually. And he invited me to this, to the last one, and so he said, we're having another one in November if you'd like to come, so I'll be at that. I'll have a table, and this time I'm going to have issues 1 through 11 for sale.
Okay, so 11 will be there?
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
12 maybe?
I
possibly okay
not quite sure. I'm almost right. there I'm almost okay there. I'm hoping to have that done by the end of the year.
Okay.
Just like I said, I have a couple more pages to draw, then there's a few pages of coloring to do.
Gotcha. So any other cons coming up soon?
Yes. After
Piqua,
I'll be at Stebbins Con in December. Is that something? Yeah. That's at a Stebbins High School over in Dayton.
Okay.
They put on this wonderful show. They did that back in...
Is it local and independent?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they had 30, 40 tables, I think.
Wow.
It was a big deal. So, okay. Yeah, I'll be back for that. Now, as far as next year, I don't know with the cons. I'm making this up as I go.
I got you. Not a problem. But, man, you know, so if you're going to be out in Western Ohio, stop by either one of those towns. You know, stop by Dayton, stop by Piqua, and say hello.
Uh-huh. All right. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, as we're getting up to about 45 minutes or so here, so any other thoughts, anything else that you want to say to some of the listeners out there, Joel? I mean, besides the obvious, buy my comics, but I mean...
Yes, no, please try to. Well, basically I've said I'm about to do is just tell a good story, and I hope people will give it a try.
Okay.
I know it doesn't look as realistic as what else is out there, but I think that's kind of a selling point for it.
Sure.
It's different. It looks different.
Yeah, and you talk about wanting to stand out at a con. That is certainly one thing that's one way, the visual of it.
Yeah. The story is family friendly. There are... You know, like I said, there's karate fighting, there's gun fighting in there, but you won't find any blood and gore, swearing like that. But anything that truly violent that does happen kind of tends to happen off camera.
Sure. And is it tend to be cartoonish as well as in nature? I mean, I think that's one of the...
Somewhat, yeah. Okay. Yeah. There was a...
Because, I mean, Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner is pretty violent stuff, I mean, when you think about it. But
There's nothing like that, like people getting flattened or anything like that. But.
And bulls falling from cliffs. And
No, not that cartoony. But,
okay.
No, it's, for the most part, pretty realistic. Maybe not the drawing isn't. But.
Sure. Yeah, but it would be a great book for the kids.
Oh, yeah. I have a friend that he read it with his kids, and he just absolutely loved it.
There you go.
So, and I do thank that friend for buying, by the way. So, I thank everybody for buying. So I really appreciate your guys' support.
You can get those comics, by the way, by going to joelcramercomics.com.
There'll be links under each book. It'll take you to any planet where you can buy.
Okay.
You can get it in digital or book format.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, depending on what you like. Or you can do both if you like.
Gotcha. So. What do you prefer? Do you prefer digital comics? Or are you old school, like you want to turn the pages?
I'm old school.
Yeah, same here.
I have copies of my own books. Like, I have at least one copy. I like to flip through them myself.
Yeah.
You know, after it's been a few weeks and I haven't read the story a million times, you know, like I usually do because I'm working on it. By the time you see the book, I'm sick of the story because I've read it hundreds of times.
Well, and I imagine that. Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, trust me, after I edit a podcast, I'm tired of hearing my own voice and what's going on, too. I can empathize.
But now I can go back and I can read from book one and say, oh, hey, you know, I remember that happening and hey, that's really good. And, you know, I really enjoy that. And
So let's talk about where some folks can get in touch with you. Mm-hmm. Obviously, joelcramercomics.com.
Yes.
And that's with a C, by the way. C-R-A-M-E-R. Mm-hmm. But you're also on Twitter at Joel Kramer Comics, C-O-M-I-X.
Yes.
All right. I assume Joel Kramer was already taken. Don't you hate that? Like, you're like, yeah. Was.
I just wanted to make it distinct that it was comics and not necessarily me.
So it wasn't that it was already taken? No. Oh, all right.
I'm not emphasizing me. I'm emphasizing the books.
Okay, because, well.
I think the books are more interesting than I am. So.
That only goes back for to. Just, I know he's listening. Jack Wallace and I had a big giant rant about that in Twitter. People taking your particular ideas for Twitter handles. But you're also on Facebook, facebook.com/Hanzi and Joel.
Yes.
And that's where you can find out where you're going to be and any more updates on the book.
Yeah, updates on the book. I'll put artwork up there. I will put sketches of the next cover, new characters that are coming out in the next book.
Gotcha.
I don't often give the names because sometimes it's spoilers.
Sure.
But I'll say, here's the character design for, here's some of the good guys you're going to see, some of the bad guys.
Cool.
I also do that on the website as well, but I tend to do it more on the Facebook page.
Gotcha. All right. So I'm
trying to find the balance between the Facebook and the website and which one.
And again, you're talking about promotion. We go back to what we talked about like 10 minutes ago. Yeah, that's a big, big avenue to pursue, and it can be daunting at times. I don't know how you feel about it, but
very much.
It could be a whole part-time job in itself of just managing your own social media.
Yeah, I've heard it said that when you're self-publishing, pretty much you're always interviewing for a job. Is what it feels like.
Yeah.
You know, everybody you meet is an interview. Potential fans are an interview, job interview, basically. Each time.
Gotcha.
So when I'm at a convention, you know, that's hundreds of interviews sometimes that I'm doing, because you never know if somebody's going to be interested or not, but you got to take that chance.
Sure. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
which that's what I guess that would be the advice I would give to anybody that is looking to get into this kind of thing. Don't give up. It will be a lot of hard work. If you're passionate about it, you'll stay with it. I get frustrated a lot, you know, because sometimes things go well, sometimes things don't go well. There's setbacks you'll run into. I had my first book I was working on, our computer crashed and I hadn't saved.
Oh, man.
And I lost the first few pages of the book. Thankfully, it was all hand-drawn first. But I lost all that computer work I had done, which I guess that's another thing. Always save.
Yeah. But, second piece of advice.
Save.
Back stuff up. Even if you save it, back it up. Anyways.
Back it up. But where was I going with this?
So there's ups and downs, but if you're passionate about it, just stick to it. That's your number one piece of advice for anyone out there.
Stay with it. Yeah. I mean, it's worth it. When even one person buys your book and you see them enjoying it, that makes it all worth it.
There you go.
To me, I don't know how this is going to sound, but to me, a book is not truly finished until somebody else reads it.
Wow.
You know, it can be completed, it can be printed, but until somebody else reads it, I don't feel like it's completely finished yet. So that's when I feel like I've reached my goal.
There you go.
It's like, hey, somebody has read it, and somebody enjoyed it. So.
Enough said on that. Definitely. So. I want to throw back, did you come up with any partners? I feel bad. I feel bad that I hung you out to dry on that question. Did you come up with any cool partners? The comic book world? No?
Comic book world. I can't think of any.
Okay,
I'm sure I'll think of a lot later.
Joel concedes defeat on that question.
I'm so sorry.
That's all right, man. It's all right. I feel bad that I put you on the spot on that one. But anyways, hey, folks, if you do want to check out some really cool kid-friendly comics, definitely check out Joel's work, joelcramercomics.com. Hit him up on Twitter at joelcramercomics or stop on over on Facebook.
Yeah.
facebook.com/Hanzi and Joel.
Yeah.
And with that, thanks for coming on, Joel.
Oh, thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed it.
I did.
All right. Well, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a very quick break, and then I will be back to wrap things up. So stick around. There you have it, people. My conversation with Joel Kramer, the creator of The Adventures of Hanzi and Joel. I can't say it enough. If you have kids and they're already reading comic books or you want to get them into reading comic books, The Adventures of Hanzi and Joel is perfect. I mean, it's colorful, it's playful, it's got a cool story, it's got everything you could want
for a comic book. And heck, even if you don't have kids, it's a great book. You should pick it up. If you see Joel at a comic book convention, stop by, plunk down your cash, pick up a couple of episodes of The Adventures of Hansi and Joel. I don't think you'll be disappointed with it. Joel is an enthusiastic creator. He was very excited to come on this podcast, and quite frankly, he told me that he has never been on a podcast before, so I'm glad I got the opportunity to have him first, so to speak. In fact, I think he even mentioned to me off-air that he's never done an interview about his book either, and for that, I kind of feel bad that I asked him that you know, question about partners in comic books, but, you know, some folks might say, well, John, you should have edited that out, but... You know, I think Joel mentioned it best, you know, when he talked about writing dialogue and writing how people talk with improper grammar, with stuttering and stammering. And, you know, I've always prided myself on keeping the editing on this podcast to a very bare minimum because I like it to be organic. I like it to be natural. I like it to be a conversation. And look, when you talk to people in the real world, so to speak, sometimes you stumble, sometimes you make mistakes, sometimes you misspeak, sometimes you don't have an answer to their questions, and so therefore I just felt like I was going to leave it in there. Though I do feel bad that I kind of caught him off guard with that particular question, so hopefully, Joel, my apologies again, publicly, I'm going to say it right here, I apologize for that question. but nonetheless, Joel Kramer, good dude, check out joelkramercomics.com, that's J-O-E-L. CramerComics.com, or check them out over on Facebook, facebook.com/Hansi and Joel, Hansi is H-O-N-Z-Y, or even check him out on Twitter, Joel Kramer Comics, and by the way, that's C-O-M-I-X, being a little bit different there with his handle, and like I said, you see him out and about at a con, pick up a couple books, man, it's the right thing to do, and you won't be disappointed either. Well, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I think it's about time. Oh, yeah. There you have it. It's time for Orlando's Fave. That's right. It's time for me to tell you about something that I think is really awesome and that you should check out, hence the title, Orlando's Fave. And, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not going to lie to you. This fave for this episode, it's not new. Hell, it's about 30-some-odd years old. But I've rediscovered it recently, and I'm going to talk about it. My fave for episode 81 is a television show from way, way back in the mid-80s that I reconnected with thanks to the WWE Network, and that is Tuesday Night Titans. Yes, I'll tell you right now. It is an absolute campy throwback to a simpler time in professional wrestling. Now, for those that don't know, Tuesday Night Titans was a show that ran from about 1984 to 1986 on the USA Network. It was on Tuesday nights, and basically it was the Tonight Show for professional wrestling. You had Vince McMahon, who would sit behind a desk like Johnny Carson. You had Lord Alfred Hayes, who acted as the Ed McMahon, so to speak, to Vince's Johnny Carson, and WWE superstars, or at that time WWF superstars, would come on and talk a little bit about themselves. It was supposed to be like the other side of professional wrestling. You got to know them more as people rather than athletes. There was always some wacky skit on, like Salvatore Palermo's family, quote-unquote, came and cooked an Italian dinner for Vince and Lord Alfred Hayes. And just funny, weird stuff. It was very campy. It was very tongue-in-cheek. It was very kind of corny. But damn it, man, it's hilarious. I've thoroughly enjoyed going back through and watching several of them. As a kid, I didn't have cable for a while, so I kind of missed the boat on Tuesday Night Titans because by the time I got cable, it was long gone. So... But definitely, if you have the WWE Network and you want to go back in time, definitely check out Tuesday Night Titans. That's my fave for this episode. So, with that being said, let's start wrapping things up here. Let me tell you where you can get in touch with me. You can shoot me an email anytime you like, simply by going to johnorlando@pbdcast.com. No, not going there. Using that as my email address. What the heck did I just say? What did I say about editing this podcast? Yeah, shoot me an email. using the address johnorlando@pvdcast.com. You can check me on Twitter simply by going to the handle @pvdmvp. And you can check me out on Instagram too. Same handle there, pvdmvp. And, you know, maybe share a picture if you'd like. So, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I think it's time for me to get on out of here. So, I will chat at each and every one of you later. Thanks for listening.